God.
Here's a golden age of radio quiz for you folks out there in nostalgia land. Who played Margot Lane on The Shadow? Who starred in the classic suspense drama Sorry, Wrong Number? Who played Lionel Barrymore's housekeeper, Marilli, on The Mayor of a Town? And who was the dragon lady on Terry and the Pirates? Well, if you answered Agnes Moorehead to each of those questions, you're absolutely right. And you're about to meet the charming lady who is the star of stage, screen, radio, television, and now, I guess, motion picture theaters. Agnes Moorehead, welcome to Those Were the Days.
Thank you very much. How in the world did you get all that information?
Oh, I have a large shovel that digs deeply into the nostalgia every week, right?
My goodness, that brings back a great many memories, I must say.
We'd like to talk about those memories, if we may, for a little bit. But first, you're in town on a special kind of business, aren't you, to promote a new concept in theaters?
Well, that, you mean the mini theaters.
Right.
Yes. Well, I am, my connection with the mini theaters is purely from a quality point of view, type of picture that I think that ought to be shown to the young people, to the adults, a good story that has some kind of integrity and anyway, that has a sort of honesty and that you're not ashamed to take your child to, and you're sure that you won't be embarrassed seeing the picture. I think there's too much of this other, you know, sort of, I would say, trash kind of movie. I think if you feed a person a rotten apple constantly, they get pretty sick. And I don't believe in that kind of business. I don't believe in a shock plot. I believe in a good story that involves an audience and will have something to do with their heart, you see.
Well,
their heart and their spirit, and this is why I'm interested in the mini theaters, because I want the product to have quality, integrity.
And that's the concept behind the United General mini
that's
theater
right.
operation.
That's right.
Well, good. I think with a gal like you, who has devoted a lifetime to providing good entertainment.
Well, I've played
people.
many evil women. As far as that's concerned. But the story always ends up saying, you know, well, I wouldn't want to do that, and that's the wrong thing to do. But it hasn't been of the type that it is something that is what you would call sunk in the minds of people that makes it dirty. I've never played anything like that, and won't, as far as that's concerned. I've played a lot of tragedy, and I've played some horror pictures, and all that, and a great deal of fantasy. But it isn't the type that is going to just make anyone, you know, take a bath or go to their analyst.
Well, good. And I'd like to talk with you a second now about some of the roles that you've played. In your early days of your career, you were on stage and radio, and you were quite involved theatrically with Orson Welles, weren't you?
Yes.
You were a member of the Mercury Theater Group?
I was one of the founders of the Mercury Group. Joe Cotton and Orson Welles and I founded the Mercury Theater.
The three of you?
Yes.
And how long was the Mercury Theater on Broadway?
Well, we started in 1934, 1935, and around about 1937, 1938, Orson left Broadway and came out to the coast. And Citizen Kane, of course, was done in 1938.
And you were in Citizen Kane.
Yes.
So was Joseph Cotton, for that matter.
Yes, that's right.
Now, hopping back, just before you went to Hollywood with Orson and Joseph Cotton, you were on the Mercury Theater on the air as well.
That's right.
Were you, inevitably, I must ask, were you involved in the War of the Worlds broadcast?
That's right. In the background, we were all screaming, the women. See, he used all of the people that he had, a nucleus of the Mercury Players.
Mm-hmm.
He always used them. They were a sort of stock company. And we'd play leads, or we'd play anything that he wanted us to play.
We have heard a number of those early Mercury Theater broadcasts, and you don't have to be too much of a detective to discover which character voice belonged to Agnes Moorehead. Although everyone was different, you were making a definite name for yourself as far as the listeners was concerned right at that time. Now,
you had to be rather versatile to be in with the group that Orson used, and you also had to be rather versatile to be in a a radio show that I did for 8 years, The March of Time.
You played Eleanor Roosevelt
That's
one
right.
time.
I was the only one who was allowed to.
You were. What was the story behind that? How did they select you then?
Well, of course, before I had permission, she negated all of the people who were impersonating her because they were lampooning her. She had a strange kind of voice quality, and they would, you know, lampoon her voice as far as that's concerned, and she got rather tired of it and said no one was supposed to do this. But she was in the news so much that the people who were at the head of March of Time wrote to her and asked her if it would be possible to use her on the March of Time. And she said, well, I'll have to interview the young lady who's going to do me, and also I want a record of how she sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made a record, and I was interviewed by Mrs. Roosevelt, and she approved of me, and she said, this is the woman, she's the only woman that I will allow to impersonate.
And so then how many times did you...
Many times.
Constantly, I suppose.
Well, many times. She was in the news a great deal at that time.
And this was from New York.
In the 30s, yes.
At the same time, then, you were really busy because you were playing on The Shadow with Orson Welles.
I played I've averaged, I would say, 5 shows a day. And many times it was 7 or 8.
Soap operas...
Everything.
Adventure programs, the whole
thing. The beginning of the day to the end, way, you know, because at that time, you must remember, there was a repeat sometimes of shows.
Oh, yes.
You'd go on one time for the East Coast and then another time for the West Coast.
I'm going to test your memory. You remember a soap opera by the name of Way Down East?
Oh, yes.
Can you recall your co-star, or at least one of the co-stars, a fellow by the name of Van Heflin?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You went to Hollywood with Orson Welles and Joseph Cotten for Citizen Kane. You appeared in a number of Orson Welles type productions. I just categorize them that way because Welles was
in. I was with him 17 years.
From radio and the Broadway and the whole
years.
Business.
Yeah.
It must have been an interesting partnership.
Terribly exciting.
Wow, I bet.
And a great privilege to be with him.
You were in the Magnificent Ambersons.
That's right. Yeah.
So many great movies that you're connected with. How did you manage to keep up a very active radio career in Hollywood now, at the same time getting involved in so many?
Well, I was the only one who was allowed to do this. You know, I went on a contract to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, and they didn't want any of their people to go on radio. They wanted to have control of anything that they would do outside, recordings or radio. But I had a long talk. I was on radio when I went under contract. And I said, well, I don't... They said that actors didn't have the knowledge or the taste or the judgment to be on the right kind of shows. And I said, oh, well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I named all the shows that I was on, you see. And I said, I'm terribly surprised because about this. I said, I don't quite agree with you. And I guess my argument was so strong that they said, all right, we'll allow you to go to do radio along with your contract. And so that was the reason that I did so much radio.
How did you manage to fit it all in? At that time, they were still doing repeat broadcasts. And yet
it depended. Sometimes it was Saturday, sometimes it was Sunday, sometimes it was late at night.
Your broadcasting.
My broadcasting, and of course, you must remember that after you finished a picture, you sometimes had layoffs of weeks that you didn't do a picture. There wasn't a picture available. You were still under contract, you know, but you were free to do pretty much what you wanted to do.
Has there ever been a time in your show business career that you have been out of work and not
at your own
choosing?
Yes.
Can't imagine. You've been so active in so many
times. No, I starved when I first was in the theater.
In the early,
very early career. That was very difficult. Very difficult. And I remember out in Hollywood, as far as that's concerned, there was, I believe, one time, and I think there was 11 months that I didn't work. Then I started to work again. Mm-hmm. But that didn't annoy me very much, because I was doing other things. I mean, as far as memorizing and as far as working, you know, enlarging what I thought was necessary.
Mm-hmm. Can you recall your first radio role?
Yes. It was over KMOX and KSD in St. Louis, Missouri, and I was called the girl baritone.
The girl baritone?
Yes. That's before you. You didn't pick that up, did you?
No, I don't have anything.
No, I can tell you a few other things.
What can you tell us? What followed the girl bird? The bird there.
No, because that was the first radio, and that was the time when they, you know, you had those crystal sets, you see. Mm-hmm. And that was over KMOX and KSD.
Did you ever do any radio in Chicago?
Yes, but that was... I was guesting, not to anything that I didn't stay here to do a particular series. I was just guesting.
Do you recall a program called Dot and Will?
Dot and Will. I don't remember now.
Well, I didn't remember the girl baritone, so we're even.
No, I don't know. Dot and Will.
I'm sure it was a show.
There are a great many radio shows that I can't remember. As a matter of fact, when I would do radio and, you know, and do so many shows per day, I couldn't tell you what I played in the morning.
Yeah. Well, the series, of course, you and so many of your fans in this area and all over the world, for that matter, remember the Margot Lane on The Shadow. And
yes, well, I was the first one, but you see, I that was when Orson was The Shadow.
Exactly.
And they wanted a girl to come in to play his girlfriend or his Good Girl Friday or something of that sort, and they asked him, you know, who he wanted, and he said Agnes Moorehead.
How long did you play on The Shadow?
Oh, I can't remember how long. It was quite a while.
Fairly long.
As long as Orson played it. Yes, and I think it was longer, too, because they brought someone else in.
Goodrich Silvertown Tires used to sponsor The Shadow.
I suppose so.
Before Blue Coal took it over later on.
Yes.
What about Sorry Wrong Number? How did they decide that Agnes Moorehead was the right gal to play?
I don't think they decided at all. The script was written for me.
It was?
Yes, by Lucille Fletcher, and it was presented to me. And, I started to read it, and it got so nerve-wracking that I thought, no one will listen to this, you know, because it just unnerves you as you go along the story. And Bill Spear was the director. He asked me what I thought of it, and I said, well, it's a harrowing story. It would be kind of fun to do because it is a, you know, it's a tour de force. So we went on the air with it, and the first time we went on the air, they got so excited at the very end that they didn't do the right ending. The men were so excited that it kind of frustrated
them. The actors
and the sound. And so there were a great many people who had been listening in, and they called in and said, what is the end of it? Tell us the end of it. So in about, I would say in about 5 weeks, I repeated it. Then it was almost a command performance about once, I don't know, I did it 18 times on the air.
18?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. You made recordings?
Then I made a recording of it with Decca. And then I did it on my one-woman show. I did about 17 minutes of it on my one-woman show. And I did that for quite a while. And then I sort of negated that. I said, because it was so very difficult to get into a town that didn't have a good PA system, because I used part of my disc record for the first part of it, and then I took all the rest of it and condensed it, and then there was a blackout, and you heard the rest of the record, you see, at the very end. And it was very difficult to do and to try to train them, and I was, you know, I was always on tenterhooks to see whether they would get the right cues and so forth.
The timing was everything in that, sure.
But, and when you had to do it yourself and take all the questions indirectly in your own dialogue. So it was difficult to do.
Well, I want to thank you for doing it. It was terrific.
Well,
and everyone who has ever heard it thinks it was magnificent. Right. And
they use it, you see, as a sort of study for craft. The craft in that type of writing and the craft of the acting, which is kind of interesting. In colleges and universities, they use it a great deal.
And then they made a movie out of it, too.
Yes, well, I didn't do the movie.
No. Was it Barbara Stanwyck?
Yeah. Yes, but that was it wasn't like the show at all. It wasn't because it wasn't a tour de force. You see, this the whole thing is on the woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it never, you should never break it, you see, for all these other things. But when you break it, then you break the suspense. And the whole thing is to keep it on the woman. And she hears all these voices coming in. But it wasn't made this
just,
way at all.
Just frantic throughout.
No, and the fact is, too, that when it was done, she was a very wealthy woman. This woman wasn't at all.
Mm-hmm.
She was a woman of just kind of comfortable, but not wealthy at all. Because she didn't have any maids, you see. And this time, mm-hmm. you could see this great big house, and you'd expect people to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't run true to form.
Well, that was a great suspenseful story. And, of course, it was on the series Suspense. And
it was on yes, it was on Suspense. And I played on Suspense many, many times. I played a great many.
You did a number. You recall, I remember another great suspense program that you starred in was called The 13th Sound.
Yes, yes.
And that, I think, is a
yes,
classic.
Yes, there were some marvelous ones in there. There were some marvelous ones that we played.
Some good writers make
good movies, as far as that's concerned.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Now that they're making great horror movies, I mean.
So you were Homer Brown's mother on the Aldridge family,
right.
and
I was the aunt Harriet too for a while
on the Aldridge family.
Yes, on the Aldridge.
You worked with Jackie Kelk a couple of times.
Oh,
you played Homer.
A couple of times. One of the first things that I ever did on one of the first series that I ever did. That was after Mystery House, which was the first series I did, was a thing that was called The Gumps. You remember that?
You played...
And I played Min Gump.
Min Gump.
And the boy, Chester, was played by Jackie Kelk. And that was weeks and weeks and weeks of it. I'll bet you can't answer this question. Who wrote it?
Who wrote The Gumps?
Yes.
You're right, I can't answer it. Who wrote The Gumps?
Irwin Shaw.
Irwin Shaw.
You know the great writer?
Oh, my goodness. And Irwin Shaw wrote
The Gumps. He was having a hard time, a very difficult time, and he wrote this series. And it was amazing, a comedy series.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's great. Yeah. That's great. I want to ask, when you were involved in radio, as radio was changing over to television, you know, in the late 40s, you were still very big in pictures and you were involved in radio, but the flickering green eye of the old Zenith radio set gave way to the flickering television tube, and you got right in, you dug deeply and went right in, involved in television, and on TV, I guess you got involved quite a bit with so many other things. You were on, just about every anthology series that was on in the early days of television, and you got involved in. You weren't in any series before the Bewitched thing, were you?
No, I never did a series.
Mm-hmm.
I never did a series. Oh, the only series that I've done and I've been involved in, I've done guest shots in various series, but I've never done a series that I had a definite character to do all through the series.
But General Electric Theater and Matinee Theater,
yeah.
The DuPont Show, always found the welcome job with Agnes Moorhead. Did you, was it easy for you to make the transition from radio to TV, I suppose?
I never thought anything about it.
Just boom right into it, huh?
No, there are lots of times that you can't make the adjustment from the stage to the pictures, or from pictures to the stage, you know? Can't make the adjustments, but the only thing that I feel that the difference is the fact of the medium being either small or large. But I mean, as far as emotional values are concerned, there's no difference at all. The playing isn't any different. And so I never even thought about it.
Would you say that, we were talking about Sorry Wrong Number a moment ago, would you say that that was your most exciting radio performance?
No. I've had loads of exciting radio performances. I don't think that just happens to be a memorable one, but I mean, there are many of them. Many of the ones on Cavalcade of America, many of the ones on March of Time, many of the ones on so many of them that were exciting. Every night, as far as March of Time was concerned, was exciting.
Mm-hmm. You felt that was a good challenge for you.
It was wonderful. Well, I had to do all kinds of characters, and the fact that you were impersonating a great many great many people in the news, mm-hmm. and had to, you know, be accurate about it, was a kind of an exciting thing to do.
I've got one that you don't know that I remember, but I recall that you played Maggie on Bringing Up Father, the Maggie and Jigs
thing. Yes, yes, yes.
How long did that run?
Oh, I don't know, not very long, I don't think. I don't think they did.
You're involved in a lot of the radio versions of comic strips, Maggie and Jigs, Terry and the Pirates, the Gumps.
We used to do the Funnies. That was where all of us were involved with various things in the Funnies.
You mean reading the daily Sunday papers?
Yes, in the morning, on Sunday morning, yes.
And you were involved in that, too?
Yes,
yes. Is that on the West Coast or East?
East Coast.
East Coast. Early in the 30s.
Yes, yes.
What about the movies? Which was, let me just mention a couple of the films that you were in since you went away. Dragon Seed, Our Vines of Tender Grapes, Dark Passage with Humphrey Bogart, Johnny Belinda, Caged, great story, great thing, Caged, 14 Hours, Magnificent Obsession, so many wonderful films. Which was the most challenging film for you? Can you
recall? They're all challenging. I don't know of a role that isn't challenging. I've never done anything that doesn't make a difference what it is, on stage, screen, television, anything, doesn't make any difference. I think they're all a challenge. Everyone.
That's
of them.
That's an exciting and interesting thing to say. Yeah. I think, and
no,
it
but
has
I mean,
shown.
I don't think if it isn't a challenge, why do it?
Mm-hmm. Great.
You know?
Great.
Why do it?
One last question. You're an actress who spent about 20 years working in what we now call the golden age of radio. Do you think radio, as it was in the so-called golden age, will ever make a comeback?
That I don't know, but of course there are a great many radio shows now. And a great many radios that have been sold. You'd be surprised at the people who listen to radios. A lot of shut-ins listen to radios. And there are a great many people who take their radios along.
But
with
drama,
them.
Good drama today, well, is almost non-existent on radio.
True. That's true.
Do you think that there's a spot for it on radio?
Well,
today?
I'm sad to say, you see, the idea of the imagination, you know, has been, I would say, suddenly try to cancel the imagination of the public. Because nowadays, the pictures and everything, even the theater, they set out the whole game. Well, you don't do that. You don't do that. You don't play the whole game. You don't tell the whole thing. If you don't let the audience become involved and let them do it, because they can act much better than you can act. Their imaginations are far superior than what you can put on a stage or what you can put up on that screen. And that's what it is. But you have everything laid out for you, and it becomes the boiler, and they just sit there like they're drugged.
I think that if a good dramatic series popped up on radio today, Agnes Moorehead would be a part of it.
Well, who knows?
We'd like to have you as a part of it. And we'll be always grateful to you, Agnes Moorehead, for providing us with so many memorable performances on radio. And we thank you, too, for a memorable visit today on Those Were the Days.
I'm glad they asked me to be on radio. I'm very grateful to radio.
We're grateful to you.
thank you.